Okay, today, so we study the free theory. We write down the free theory for one lecture and then we quantize it. So now it's time to move to interactions. So today, we're going to talk about the interaction Lagrangian. Which, before I start, I should make some announcement. Please, please, please complete the first part of the homework at least before Monday lecture, not before the Monday deadline, before Monday lecture. Monday lecture, we're going to do the LSC comparison between scalar and the spinner theory. It will be not good for any of us if you haven't seen it. Seen the scalar version, which is captured in that escape room. And next Wednesday, the lecture has turned into a tutorial. So we're going to have 9 tutorials. And so there is one lecture about interaction Lagrangian. And then Monday, we have a lecture on how to deal with the interactions, which means LSZ and all this weak and stuff in the fermion case. And then we'll talk about Feynman rules. And we'll have a tutorial on Feynman rules, which is a puzzle. I heard you guys like puzzle yesterday. And then after that, we'll play the game that we mentioned at the very beginning. There is a game. It's a literal game. Like you pass papers and you try to guess what's going on. Okay, that's the plan for today and the rest of the next week. So we'll have next week, we'll have 2 lecture, 2 tutorial. It should sound better than 3 lecture and 1 tutorial. I hope it sounds better. Okay, so the first part, temporarily imagine we're in the parallel universe. So in this particular parallel universe, that the experiment is ahead of the theory. So it's more fun to assume the theory doesn't exist and we try to discover it. So the experiment puzzle is by C.S. Wu. And she is often referred as the first lady of physics, and her experiment is also often referred to as, if not the top one most important experiment, it would be like top 2 or something. And I'll try to explain what's her puzzle. And let's say in this parallel universe, the theory has developed as far as we see, which means we only have a free theory. It's quantized. Okay, her puzzle is by, for some reason, that he decided to bunch up a bunch of cobalt. So this circle represents a group of cobalt atoms. What she does is she going extremely cold so that the thermal effect is minimized. She went as far as 0.001 Kelvin, really extremely cold. So in that cold environment, and if you put a magnet around it, it will be aligned. The nuclear spin will be aligned. And then like the second one, and then they will be all pointing in one direction as long as you choose the correct magnets. Okay, so what she see is first, this cobalt is not stable, it will decay. It will went through so-called the beta decay, which means there are a bunch of electrons coming out. And a byproduct of that decay, some photons will also come out. So what she expected is that for a group of nuclei like this, then the particles should be everywhere, evenly distributed, because for no reason we should suspect a parity, which to turn left to right, up to down, front to back, is not a symmetry. If you assume parity is broken, you're saying, I choose a certain direction. This direction is the chosen direction and it's preferred than the others. We have no such suspicions of this symmetry at the point. So she expects all the particles should be evenly distributed. The photon, yes. You see that the photon is evenly distributed. On the other hand, you see electrons almost always want to go away from the nuclear spin. Okay, maybe there's one over here. Because, you know, 0.001K is not a 0K. So this is her puzzle. Why the electrons so has such a strong direction preference, and it's not going all the directions. To solve her puzzle, what a question we should ask is which interaction is responsible for this process? Okay, so that's what we're asking, and we're also asking question like, how is parity in the game? Why this interaction doesn't respect parity? This kind of question is what we're gonna look for. So Wu's conclusion is parity is not a symmetry. Okay, so, well, it's hard to study parity. Parity is turn x into minus x, y into minus y, and z into minus z. This is harder and less related to real life. But see, okay. So I have x, y, z as me. I'll do one thing to simplify our problem. Our problem is that they swap all the three directions. But I'll do one thing to help you realize this can be much simpler and a real life related. Ready? Yeah? You see? X become minus X, Y becomes minus Y, as long as you pick a direction and do a 360 rotation. So what we realize is this is the same as xy 2 pi rotation plus flip z. So do you know any daily object that do that, flip one direction?
Don't give me pi rotation.
That's right. In 2 pi, nothing happens. Good catch. Pi rotation. Okay, very good. So we only left one direction to flip. Do you know any object you might not use daily? Well, I don't Sometimes I don't use the daily one. Definitely not when Robert was like one. But people will see them often shows up in the bathroom.
Mirrors.
Mirrors. So very good. But, well, the point is rotation. We know rotation, finite rotation. Sure, we'll do exponentials. In principle, we understood that. Those are continuous Lorentz symmetry that we already understand. So the only thing we need is mirror symmetry. So we're trying to connect the parity to something much easier to have a handle on. Okay, so let me label this. This is our step one, is to turn parity into mirror symmetry. Okay. So, at this point, I invite you to find a mirror. You all have electronic devices, and they can all function as a mirror. And you can start a Zoom call with yourself. It'll turn into a mirror, but just make sure they are a real mirror, because sometimes this device is set such that it's reflected again. So don't do that. We need a real mirror for this question. So you are welcome to find a mirror and use it. Like you can turn your phone into camera, into cell phone mode. Because I will ask you to do something with that mirror. So it'll be good if you have a mirror, functioning mirror. Okay. And then, with that mirror, that will give you a direction. Normally the mirror is this, but if you have a handheld, just hold it whichever way you like. Okay, once you secure a mirror, it's okay if you have a partner that has a mirror. But once you secure a mirror, I would like you to think about it. How should you hold? See, we all did that tutorial, so we know that this can be sort of a right-handed spinner, right? There is the angular momentum, there is the momentum. And I want you to think, how should you hold this hand into the mirror such that that mirror can function to teach us something about a parity? Think about what parity does to momentum and the angular momentum. And you want that your mirror do exactly that, right? Right? So you want to hold, right? If you have a mirror, you should hold your hand correctly. Choose direction. The result actually doesn't depend on how you hold your hand, but let's be serious about the parity and really use the mirror symmetry to reproduce this result. So this is my mirror. Okay, I'll give you some choices. Since I'm in a three-dimensional space, there are really three choices. So if this is a mirror, I can either make my momentum parallel to X, parallel to Z, or parallel to Y. Right? I can either go this, that. There are three ways. Now, how should I go? How should your hold hand respect to the mirror?
Perpendicular.
Perpendicular, because that's your momentum, and that's what you want to flip, because parity flip it. Okay, so choose the direction which should be perpendicular. So, the next step, which we already set it up, is that the momentum should flip, because that's what the parity does. And now we can look at it in the mirror, and it can tell me, how does the angular momentum What does the angular momentum do? You have a mirror, and you hold your hand like this, and you can see the object inside the mirror. Well, not mine. Mine is an imaginary mirror. But you can see how it moves. And then you think, what happens to your angular momentum? Yes?
You can change the sign.
Does the angular momentum change sign? You need a real mirror. Then, and then not looking at your hand. Well, you have to look at your hand and figure out where does the angular momentum go, but then you need to look at the hand in the mirror and see where does the angular momentum go. Yes?
I think if angular momentum is perpendicular to the mirror, then it'll not flip. But if it's parallel, then it'll flip.
Well, that's the answer is right. But since we say that we want perpendicular, I'll just take your first answer and put it there. Okay, your curl is still be curling the same direction. So inside the mirror, it's still going that direction. Yes? Is people happy with what they discovered in mirror? Okay, very good. We also defined helicity. What do you think happened to be a helicity of the helicity?
It's flipped.
It's a flipped, because one is flipped, the other is not. So helicity is flipped. And the next question, if you have a right-handed wheel spinner, what would happen? If there is a right-handed wheel spinner, has a helicity plus? And now helicity is switched to minus. So what do you think, what would happen in for the right-handed wheel spinner with a mirror? So the helicity of the right-handed mirror, right-handed wheel spinner is plus. And in the mirror image, you have some other wheel spinner, but now helicity is minus.
So it becomes left-handed?
It becomes left-handed. So what do you think if I start with a left-handed wheel spinner? Right-handed wheel spinner become left. What do you think if we start with a left one? Is it enough for me to say the left become right? Okay. So now I'm gonna summarize this with a formula. Okay. So that's what we discovered with some real life mirrors. Okay, let's go to well basis. You have well spinners and they're not going to well basis is a waste of well representation. So let's do that. And this is what happened. Yeah? The plus spinner become a minus spinner, the minus spinner become a plus spinner. So now, I'm asking you to take a leap of faith. If you, I'll ask you to take a leap of faith first, and I'll provide you some reference. So this is what we meant. Use a pair like the spinner as an operator, transform under parity, which is flipping the x, y, z, but not flipping time. And we ask, how is it related to this spinner that has x, y, z flipped? So now we're talking about Dirac spinner. So if a wild spinner under parity or mirror symmetry turn into itself, so the upper two component become the lower two component, the lower two component become the upper two component. What do you think I should write here? What matrix would have that effect to flip the lower and upper component of the Dirac matrix? I can write down the matrix we know, which is the gamma matrices. Gamma zero seems to be really a good candidate. It literally take two components and switch with the other two components. And this is the correct answer. So what so far we have an answer for is that the parity, how does parity act on the Dirac spinner? So that's pretty good. And for future reference, I'm just saying the dagger should be like this, like the result, the dagger of that result, right? So this is a very big step. We want to know that which interaction is responsible for the cobalt decay. We'll have some interaction Lagrangians. And so far, we only talk about the Dirac spinner, so those interaction Lagrangians are made of Dirac spinners. So if we know how parity acts on Dirac spinner, then we have a handle on how to act on these potential interactions. And regarding these potential interactions, so it's actually nice, and I decided to call them the least of suspects. I mean, they are all suspicious that be responsible for our interaction. We'll perform a thorough search, like all possible. Nothing is left behind. We'll do a thorough search. And see, it's all because it's spinners, it's complicated. Back then, when you were in the scalar theory, a thorough search means this. Phi to the n with some coefficient, and you're done. Very thorough. If you have only one real scalar, none of your all your interaction would look like this. Or some linear combinations. But you do a Taylor expansion, you claim victory. Spinner, however, has little problem. But we have seen some sort of the Lagrangian interaction or not, but there are some Lagrangian terms. So let's recall, for the Dirac Lagrangian, one of the things I do expect you to remember, for the Dirac free theory Lagrangian, what does our term look like? Can somebody tell me? Free. What does this Lagrangian look like? It's also on your homework.
Psi Dirac conjugate.
Psi Dirac conjugate.
Times.
I gamma mu, partial mu.
Plus m.
And with mass. And here. Okay. Good. So, with this there, I hope you agree with me that the first possible combination that will show up into the Lagrangian is Psi bar Psi. Yeah? Which is the mass term. So this we know, the mass term. And next week, you will recognize it as a Yukawa term interaction when you have a scalar field. Okay, so the next case I'll bring is between the kinetic term. I'll say that if you have something like this, this is also a very good potential Lagrangian term. As in kinetic term, and also as in QED. We're going to talk about it in the next half. Okay? I know it's a little hard for induction to work when I give you zero gamma matrices between Psi bar and Psi and one gamma matrices between Psi bar and Psi. But I'm going to go ahead and use induction says that means I can stick more gamma matrices in between Psi bar and Psi. And you can also actually show them they will be Lorentz invariant. So then you can keep this list going, which I will. So I'll just put a two gamma matrix here and make three gamma matrix there and have four gamma matrix there. I mean, who is going to stop me, right? And then I can make five gamma matrices there. I'm running out of Greek letters if nobody stops me. I'm serious. You should have stopped me now. Why? Okay, I stopped, but why? Why you shouldn't keep listing? Why it's not an infinite long list? Yeah, there are five of them. That's not good. If this one picks 0, 1, 2, 3, what can this one pick? The thing is, you can't have a pair of gamma matrices. They can just swap, meet each other, turn into a 1, a minus 1. So this, you can write it, but we don't need to consider it. Okay. Now, we are going to make some maneuver of it. So for some similar logic, and the mu nu rho, I don't know how I choose my Greek letters, but the mu nu rho sigma. What do you think this interaction is equivalent to? It has four gamma matrices. But no matter what you do, one of them is zero. The next one will be one on two. And three, or some other combination. There is no way, well, there can be, you know, two gamma zero, but then they are just going to disappear and climb up this ladder and become some other interaction. So the only new interaction by adding the force gamma matrices is equivalent to have a gamma 5. Do you agree? Because no matter how you pick, it's going to be 0, 1, 2, 3. If you pick any pair, a pair of two, OK, they annihilate and they become the next interaction. OK, very good. By the same logic, I claim that this interaction is equivalent to a gamma 5 and a new gamma. Because a gamma 5 has four of them, this one will find the correct one, cancel it, and it becomes 3. Spoiler. This is the one. So this is the interaction for Wu's experiment. And it's called the weak interaction. It's weird because it's still better than gravity, but it's called weak. Okay, so then there is this one left. What I claim is that this is equivalent to written as G mu rho psi. Why is that true? How come I turn gamma mu gamma rho into just the J mu rho? What is the Lorentz generator J made of? Very good. So how come I only take the commutator of gamma? What happened to the other one? Besides a commutator, what do we have? Yeah, very good. That's right. It equals commutator plus the anti-commutator. What happens to the anti-commutator?
The anti-commutator vanishes for different gammas.
That's right. The anti-commutator become the definition of the Dirac algebra, which is some 2 eta mu nu. Who cares? It's not no longer. It's just a bunch of 1 or minus 1s. Okay, very good. That's what we have. And then, of course, the next step is to ask which of them do not preserve parity. Because we know how Psi dagger transform under parity. Because we know how Psi transform, we know how Psi dagger transform, and hence we should know how all that at least transform. I'll pick the easy one to say. Well, sorry. Before do that, let's do a tally, like see how many terms are there. So the mass term, there's only one. There's no index to count. What about how many different terms are there if you restore the index? Mu can be 0, 1, 2, 3. So 4. What about the commutator of mu and the rho, mu and the mu? There will be 6. But this one is gamma 5, gamma mu. Gamma 5 doesn't introduce any new ones. There'll be 4. And that last one. And how many is this? It's looking like the triangle thing, right? So I can use the triangle formula. It's 1 plus 1 to the power of 4, which is 16. Here's a fun fact. The fun fact is I know it's 16 to start with. Because whatever this is doing some linear combination of a Poisson bar Poisson. Remember gamma? I just bunch of numbers, right? And Poisson have an index, goes from 1 to 4. Poisson bar also have that index, go to 1 to 4. So I know that it must be 16 because 4 times 4 is 16. So we use an interesting fun fact. So the 4 to the 2 is equals 2 to the 4, equals 16. You can see this doesn't work for 5. but okay. This count always work. So if you think about it, this doesn't has nothing to do with the fact that the mu goes from 1 to 4. If you have 5, you just have one more line, and then you can add them up, it'll be 2 to the 5th. So this is the correct counting. The other is incorrect because A pick more than 5 numbers. Well, okay, sorry, 5 is weird. 6, for even numbers, it works. So you should interpret this as that. So in 6 dimension, the spinner will be 8 dimension. And if you want to know why it's 8 dimension, then you have to look at the appendix. It tells you why it's 8 dimension. Okay, so because it's the same topic, I'm going to keep going and then take the break later. So now I want to calculate how this transform. So this, I hope you are fluent with turning these bars into diagonal and gamma. If you're not fluent, after you do the second homework, you will become fluent. Okay, so now what I'm going to do is put the parities in it. Parity is square. Parity square is 1. And the gamma 0 is a bunch of numbers. It doesn't care about how you choose your space. So on the other side, it has how Poisson-Dieger transform. Give me Poisson-Dieger T minus X gamma 0. There's 1 gamma 0 from here. And has a mother gamma 0 from the other side. Okay? So this is from parity. This is from parity. That lonely one is coming from how we define the Dirac conjugate. But two of them will annihilate, and the remaining one will combine to give us Dirac conjugate. Yes? There's no magic there. You combine two transformations together. Each give you a gamma 0. They cancel. You get back your Poisson bar Poisson. The conclusion is your mass term conserve parity, and there's no way that a Wu term, that what Wu wants for her experiment to work out. question is, how much you would want me to see how this works? Oh, you're happy if I just do that one. This one is responsible for pi decay, but actually pi is a pseudo scalar, so it end up be fine. So this is a weak interaction. Oh, we say that I don't have to do either of them. You can do it, and then we can have our break. Yes? How many want me to do one more? It's just these two lines, and you have a bunch of gammas squeezed in between. You swap, cancel the gamma zero, see what's left. Okay? Am I doing it? Okay. Default is I'm not doing it. So if you want to see me do it, you have to give me some noise. Yes? Okay, let's do it. Very good. This is a perfect opportunity. I did a 2 on my paper, but not that one. Perfect opportunity for mistake. Let's see. So there is, so that's just Psi gamma, Psi bar. And I have gamma mu, gamma 5, and then I have Psi. So that's what I start with. And so there is this one I can copy over. Psi dagger, now at a different location, the parity transformed location, pick up a gamma 0, then there is a gamma 0, there is a gamma mu, there is a gamma 5. And then there is the other one. Okay, this is very enlightening. So thank you for asking me to do it. It's actually a little different because this is just the same because it's a scalar. Okay, very good. I should have done it. Okay. So this is a pile of stuff we have. And this pile of stuff, this disappeared. So the idea is I want to bring this gamma zero over so that it can combine with the Psi dagger to give me a Psi bar. It's interesting because now it's easy to bring gamma zero to the gamma 5. That we know how to do. But let's be cautious bringing gamma zero through a gamma mu because it's mu. Mu can be zero. So let's see what happened when mu equals zero is that you only need to bring it once. Well, you only get to anti-commute once. The second time is commuting because it's itself. So that means you only pick up one minus sign. And then rest assured, they will recombine to be our nice interaction. Okay, but when mu is I, that's good. We anti-commute twice, so we pick a plus sign. It just means this line. Okay. It's not the same. Let me write it. Okay. So it says whatever this interaction is that the time component gets flipped. And then the space component is the same. What does that mean? Time flipped. Space same. Let's for a second think about the other scenario. What if I have something under parity is that the time is the same, space flipped. What would you call that? Under parity, what kind of object has the time component the same, but space component flip? Momentum? Yeah? My energy shouldn't change, but the momentum flip. So this is what is momentum. And this we know. We call these things vector. And this is the flipped vector. So these are the things we call the axial vector. Maybe in QFT3 that you will see some axial current, you can try to ask where did the axial comes from. But it just says it doesn't behave like a vector. It behaves exactly the opposite, exactly opposite from we expected. So we look at the Lorentz index, we say, hey, there is a Lorentz index. You should transform as a vector, but it doesn't. So that's why we say this term is violating parity. And we need to use this term. And this gamma mu have a spatial index indicating we need some sort of current, like the electron neutrino current, to be matched with, to contract with them, you build the full wake interaction, which we will do in standard model class. Not here. But here we just want to say, hey, this term violates parity. Okay, yep.
I think when mu is zero, should there be gamma zero inside? Or?
So, okay, let me do it more carefully. So here is what I start with, and I want to bring this over, right?
Yes.
So that's give you a minus sign?
Yes.
And this is what's inside, and this go together with the Poisson bar.
Oh.
Poisson dagger, sorry. Okay, we'd better take a break now and come back. We'll give you a concrete example called a QED. How do we write down the QED Lagrangian?
I don't see, like, what's the observer in this experiment? What did they measure in order to find the interaction term? When we have an experiment, we want to, like, see what's the interaction between the particles. There should be some physical.
Yeah, so what they do is before the W and the table down is discovered, that they look at things decaying to electrons and has missing energy, which is the neutrino. It's always some nuclei that's going to decay. And then you look at the electrons coming out, and there's photon. Is there always? So I have some source of that experiment has what exactly happened to the cobalt. And you can see on the right hand side there's electrons and neutrino and there's some photons.
Or is like information enough for finding what interaction between these parts, because we said that okay, that this is the one, this is the beacon traction. Did they directly drive this from the experiment?
No, or that's why we were in a parallel universe. So in a real universe, people write down this.
But then this is only for masses.
So
wait, there's
a correction. It's violating parity. So if this interaction is true, then they expect to see this. That is moving. It's very hard to go the other way in this case. Because in the first place, why would you want to cool down your cobot at 0.001
parity? So you must have some intuition that
yeah,
this is
it's
but
that's
mass,
right.
Non-zero.
Non-zero.
And she's probably she's not the only one who did excellent, beyond excellent experiment in being a Nobel Prize. She's the one who, if you ask what a physicist deserves, he didn't get it. She's definitely she also did it during
yeah,
the first
you have like mass time for like pop and so on.
Apparently. Because she was supposed
so
to go home. Like she already had a flight and then she was go back to China and,
yeah.
And then they
it's
come.
Like,
I don't know.
So like,
I think it's upset. The story says he wants to go back to China. And then they didn't go and the other thing says.
Oh, I don't know how you do it at the level of the Lagrange. I know how to do it at
the
level of
the Lagrange. We write on this curve, not concerning the direction. We think it's possible. So she stayed over.
Oh, is it?
I think that like, we do it like this. So it's something like this. And it's like this.
Carl,
yeah.
I'm confused about something. So, when you say space flips,
yes.
What you say is, the argument inside tx becomes
yeah.
T minus x.
That's right. So basically, what it really is saying is this thing is also a Lorentz transformation, and it's not connected to identity, so we should talk about this.
Yeah, so that acts on the argument.
Yeah.
And then what we're doing is also saying that there is a parity, I mean,
oh,
there's a representation of this guy
yeah.
acting on these spinners.
That's right. So the full story, which requires some calculation and have figured out some specific solutions of this and how it relates. So this is the. The shortcut to get to where I want to get.
Okay.
So the full story is because it's in Haskins. Well, Haskins has
okay.
has the first half using the algebra to show how this thing should act on the creation of an idea.
Actually, I might like
and Haskins started with, I can do this mirror thing to figure out how parity act on creation dilation object.
Yeah.
But then I can example. So you know the body expansion, if you know how P acts on A.
Yeah, you know how it acts on
A. And then you can actually write.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I can show you both
okay.
after the class.
Okay.
I can give you a reference for both that you read. That's part of when we're in this part of the test.
And
then
when
you
like, no.
So, but like, what you mean is that like the time component of an axial vector?
Well, it's not a
will change.
Will change.
But the spatial part stays the same.
Yeah, that's just exactly opposite of what you expect from that.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah. Somehow, parity acts on this axial vector. It's like.
And then it's like you just go
positive mass.
No, it's a bit different because the argument is.
What's on it? So if it has
for time reversal, you'll have minus T,
right?
Instead of T minus S.
That's
what.
Oh, sorry, this is minus. So just substitute plus and minus in what I'm saying. So one of those flips a sign.
Dimensional analysis.
Look at that, climate change, allowing you to
reach
full capacity of your work.
Vectors
all
behave as
somewhere. Yeah, that's not available. Yes. I'm just gonna have those. I'm actually gonna go through my entire wardrobe in the next in these 2 weeks because it's like 20 degrees today and then it's gonna be next week. So I'll be able to wear my super pump and my pump within this 3 days of each other. This is horrifying. But like, I can just land from my wardrobe and switch back.
Alright. Okay. So you must have seen the ED, the electric dynamics, somewhere so far. It provides a vector field. Now that's the first knowledge I want you to recall from last cycle of these course is that it provides us a vector field. Yeah? Does it ring a bell? I don't know which letter other people use, but it's often used as this. Okay. And what do we know about this besides the equation of motion, which I wouldn't need? What's the interesting thing about this vector mu? It has some weird thing. Pretty weird.
Gauge symmetry.
Gauge symmetry. Actually, this is part of the definition. If you really have a photon, which we're going to have a photon. So what that does gauge symmetry do is the gauge symmetry changed by some partial derivative of something. Yes? You have seen this? Good. Now I have a vector field. And QED conserve parity. So we're going to use the other current. The current that doesn't have gamma 5. From what do we have before? Is that you can make a current out of, it's even called the charge current, out of your Dirac fermions, and then couple it with QED. And you're like, we're done. We have an interaction term, and we put a coefficient and back to on my free theory. Then we can end the class and dinner. No, lunch doesn't even start. But it tells there's something else is about this. So let's see, gauge symmetry. It still need to be remain a symmetry if you're talking about a photon, okay? So at this point, I'll just plug in what I have over there. And then there is this extra term. It's no longer a symmetry. So just put a member in front of it, putting back a pillar like a launch, and it doesn't work. It's not invariant and no longer a gauge symmetry. Gauge symmetry is the definition. Together with that, you're describing a photon. Otherwise, you're describing a massive photon. Saying that has mass, it's not a photon anymore. So we really need a conserve gauge theory if you want to find the quantum electrodynamics. You might find some Q other things without a gauge theory, gauge symmetry. Okay. So now the invariant part. And the resolution is, well, before I only have a photon field, it has some gauge symmetry transformations. But maybe we can try to make a Dirac also has some gauge symmetry transformation that maybe
it will solve the problems.
Oh.
Yeah.
What is a mu here?
A mu?
Yes.
It's a vector field, which we call it a photon field.
So are you trying to make an interaction Lagrangian now?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying, that's what I'm trying, see? Okay, maybe I should label this as my first try.
Okay.
First try. I find some interaction Lagrangian on that board and put a vector together, you're like, huh? I have this problem. And we need to fix it. But the resolution says you have two fields now. The gauge symmetry might apply to the other field too. And hence, we're going to change psi.
Gone?
Yep.
So I have a hard time understanding the motivation of who is doing this. So I get why it's the interaction term, like motivated from like classical electrodynamics. So this like phi dagger, phi
yeah,
bar,
yeah, yeah.
Gamma mu phi is like a current.
Yeah.
And source.
Mm-hmm.
And we couple with a mu. But like I have a really hard time understanding why is this preserved in like quantum world, except for the fact that it works. So like,
well, in the quantum world, we still have photon as a matrix.
Sure, but like, why?
We still have two polarization. It's like in per really, we observe photon has two polarization and have matrix is matrix. And you can think of the symmetry is a nice tool to keep it that way.
Yeah, so I see gauge symmetry like as like aftermath, so like it's good tool to like see it that way.
Yeah.
But like the very first way, so like why okay, like why phi bar gamma mu phi is the source term in QED, or is that the only things that we can create with like phi bar gamma mu phi?
So that's basically. So you have like you say I want to. Photon to interacting with fermions, that's all the fermion term that we have.
Okay.
And then you want to put a photon together with
that.
So it's like a thorough search.
So if we take like a mu as like the field, the only terms that it can get coupled, so if we accept that, only terms that it can get coupled with.
Well,
like
you can also couple with the weak one, but it's the other one, but we may know that it, like QED actually respect the parity, so we can use it.
Okay.
That's really the only choice we're making, because we're looking for a term that transform as a vector.
Okay.
So the rationale is this is the only term we can write out, if you want to couple. Well, if you want to have the renormalized couple. Okay, so this,
So for this term, a psi gamma psi a mu, can I think of it as just like an electron field times some photon field? So you're trying to find the interaction. Is that what you're trying to do?
We are trying to make it basically. This is the term we're gonna have. This is the term we are gonna have to have at the end. But right now, you just put a coefficient. Let me try to say what I'm trying to say. So in the scalar case, this lambda is completely arbitrary. You can pick whatever you want. It's author's choice. You're like, I'm doing calculation with lambda equals 0.1. Nobody's supposed to do that calculation, right? But this one, if you don't pick the coefficient correctly, even the gauge symmetry will say, stop you, says, don't do this calculation. There's no gauge symmetry here. So you're not even starting with the correct Lagrangian. Yep.
Oh, sorry, I really want to understand. So, like, if we, like, I'm jumping ahead, but, like, if we do, like, if we take classical Lagrangian of, like, electrodynamics, we have, like, f mu nu and, like,
yeah, right.
Source term,
uh-huh.
And if we put the put this into pass integral and quantize that way, will we get QED?
That's right. So, that you wait until Francois David.
Yeah, because I think
that's what K is going to do, and that's why I'm not going to quantize photon field for you, because the canonical quantization,
yeah.
I don't know, whenever I include it, there will be students tell me that you shouldn't include it, you should only use class integral to quantize photon. And I look at the derivation and I don't think you have a point. So that will be left as a flip flopper in QFT2, Franz David will quantize the
VHC over there. Yeah, okay, that clarifies it. Yeah, thank you.
Oh, God.
Yes.
So are we currently doing just semi-classical theory?
No, we're still doing quantum
theory.
Yeah.
Oh, but if we don't quantize...
No. It can be quantized. I'm just not teaching that part to you. You can read it. It's still in the book. It's called Maxwell's theory.
Oh, okay.
It's still in the notes.
Okay, so you're using the quantized version of...
That's right.
Okay.
It will be quantized.
Okay.
In whichever way you want. It's just I'm not going to quantize it for you.
Okay.
It's a personal choice.
Okay.
Because it will be more fun for you to have more time to play the game and begin to realize, oh, I'm so, like, professional with my Feynman technique. Instead of for you to listen to give you a whole lecture of Maxwell theory, like, and not believing. Let me strike my point. That some the very good questions. The point is, this is our interaction. The all I'm claim is, normally you write down an interaction, you write in this coupling constant, it can be anything you want. But in QED, it's fixed by VHC. And let me show you how. So, Poisson gets transformed. It's like we transformed the Poisson before. There is some global symmetry. And we're going to try to do the same thing, because if I do the same thing, the mass term is not going to change, right? The Poisson dagger is going to transform the other way, so mass term cancels. We're looking for a symmetry, so if the one term is invariant, the other change a little bit. Maybe it's okay because we need the change. Okay, so mass term is still the same. Still same. Nothing happens. But there is kinetic term. It's the troublesome term. So kinetic term looks like this. No, it's not the troublesome term. It's the term that will fix our gauge symmetry, but it's just a longer calculation. So, slightly. Okay, so Poisson bar happily transformed together with Poisson dagger. But on the other hand, when I do this derivative, I can choose to do the derivative on the side. I'm going to have this thing. But I can also choose to do this derivative on the exponent. Ooh. Right? But the first term, they just cancel. It gives me back whatever I started with. The first term, I'm just going to copy it. It's the same idea. You have e to the plus I, e to the minus I, will become 1. But now there is a new term. The new term has to say bar I gamma mu And then I have cosine. And there is this minus I e partial mu of f. And the second term becomes e cosine bar gamma mu cosine partial mu up. So we neither of them has this big symmetry, but they produce two terms. They look very alike. That one is minus that thing, and this one is e times that thing. And these are all Lagrangian terms. I just have to mix and match and stitch them together. So I have this term, and I have this term. Okay, if I just put them like this, it's not going to work, right? Can you tell me how can I make this work? So there is like a circle, there is a box, and those, maybe I'll make two circles. These other things need to cancel each other if you want to have gauge symmetry. So what could I do? First question, can I change kinetic term? Called the canonical normalization. So don't do that. Leave kinetic term alone. So how do I modify this interaction term such that those two terms in the circles will cancel? Can you pick the correct coefficient to make the cancellation happen? What should I pick the coefficient to be? So one of them has this term that is not good. This minus. So this is minus some blob. Some things I don't want to see. And this one is e times that same blob. And now I want to add it together. For e times the blob to cancel the minus blob. Yeah? E? Okay, very good. So now we realize that the strength. So this, it says, you can't pick the fermion field, this gauge symmetry transformation, and the coefficient in front of this interaction term independently. It's related what shows up there. And that's why this thing is called the charge under the gate and under this photon. People often do this. Hmm. Why do I think I'm confused? Ah! Okay. Anyway, convention. On my notes, that one is a plus. So what people often does, is to combine these two terms that seems to be like together, to like each other together. So that might be better. Just let me change a few signs. I use the that convention such that there's a minus sign here. And this thing is called a covariant derivative. I can also, if you like, if you want to, so the idea why they do that is that now I can just say the QED Lagrangian, the interaction term, is like it used to have partial derivative. You just replace it by covariantitude, then you will include it by the interaction. But if you want to know why it's called a covariant derivative, I can give you some reference. If you look it up, Latham Boyle's standard model lecture, in last year or the year before, the second lecture is going to give you a side-by-side comparison of GR and the Gauge theory. It's pretty amazing. So I'll find that, I can find the Pierre Salling kind of posted on the portal. So you will have a very nice feeling about calling that thing covariant derivative. And then there's field of stress, why it's compared with Riemann tensor. It's a very cool stuff. Okay, so yes, I forgot to mention. So today what we're doing is a shortcut to let you between parity and how we find the weak interaction term. And there is a much more serious version, which is teach one part of Weinberger and one part of Peschke. The Weinberger part is just use the group in the algebra to argue why the creation of annihilation operator transform that way. And the Peschke part says if you know how B and the C Dagger transform because you have mode expansion, so you will be able to find how the Dirac spinner transforms. So you can maybe one day I'll write that part of the as a appendix. Okay. At the end, I want to give you some warning about the breaking gauge symmetry. The answer is don't break the gauge symmetry. But I have an analogy. So the analogy is you say you have an apple. And you can start writing down some properties. And for example, see this apple is have very nice rotation symmetry. So my apple analogy. So apple, you can rotate. And you can also say you can eat apple skin. And it has a stem. It always has a stem. And you can also say it's red. You can have very many properties of the apple. But this rotation symmetry, this global, which is called the global symmetry, it's okay if you break it. If you take a bite, okay? Breaks the rotation symmetry, but it's still an apple. Or the sum of the property you shouldn't break. That's what defines an apple. All the apples have edible skins. All the apples has a stem. If you insist to break them, You don't have an apple anymore. What you have might be a grapefruit. So in the same idea, if you have a photon, don't break the great gauge symmetry. We do break gauge symmetry in our life. This is called the spontaneous symmetry breaking of the standard model. But we know exactly what we're doing. In the end, the particles you start with already change. They pick up some mass. They become some other particles. You do it with caution. When you want to turn it, good. You break your symmetry. But when you think it's still going to be a photon or apple, then you don't break.